Testing, testing, can you hear me? I'm in the car again, you see. It is winter when I am recording this. And going down the stairs to get to my car to go meet Biggie, I slipped on some ice and I managed to catch myself and not fall. But I did drop my microphone into the snow. And that's better than dropping it on the sidewalk, better than dropping it on the stairs. Let me rephrase. I didn't drop my microphone. I threw it up in the air trying to catch myself from falling. And so it didn't land on the stairs. Yeah, it went up in the air and landed in the snow, which is fine. Well, I've decided not to use that microphone anyway. That is the one where one of the channels is bad and goes... And then every once in a while, that skips over to both channels. So you are here.
There is one true God, and he is the Hornet One.
While I'm recording. And it has messed up a couple of audiobook chapters. It's messed up a couple of... that gets my goats. And as of this day, the day that I'm recording this, Big and I are going to... We asked for donations in the last two That Gets My Goat episodes, and we got enough to buy a new microphone. They're not expensive, so that's good. The thing is, like a month ago or 2 months ago, there was one on Amazon that was really cheap. Not a used one. It was just, they must have gotten a bunch and decided to sell them cheap, or there's a new version coming out and they decided to unload the old ones. That happens with like iPods. And I sent him a text, an email. And I said, ooh, should I scoop this up? Look, this is the cheapest I've ever seen them. No response, not a word. But here we are a while later, and I guess the fans of the Doonstief are going to pay for that, which is pretty great. It's neat that there are people that care enough for the show to sacrifice their money. And, there are people that care enough for the show to sacrifice their time or their talents or their firstborn son. That only happened the one time. And I heard that he was doing very badly in school. People assumed that the kid wouldn't go far. And so that might have played into the decision. But at the same time, it's a sacrifice for anyone. I jest. I'm going to meet Big. We didn't meet last week at all, because I think it was his son's birthday. When you have as many kids as he does, it's always somebody's birthday. And then the week before we got together and we were eating, I was going to say lunch, but whatever you call it when it's 7 o'clock at night, and he got a call from his wife that his kid had science project that was due the next day. And of course they hadn't done it. Not that there's anything wrong with Big's kids. All kids do that. I still do that, and I haven't been a kid in about 6 hours. So he had to cut things short and say, okay, we'll finish our meal, and then we'll just, I've got to go home and help my kid. And that's cool. So that was 2 weeks. We didn't record. Maybe longer. We were going to get together today, and I've been trying to think of a subject. And last week when we were going to get together, I think I had one in mind. People who are not writers sometimes kick around words or phrases that are writing terms without knowing what they are. And the two that I was going to talk about were Deus Ex Machina and Mary Sue. And Deus Ex Machina I've heard a lot. Basically to mean, I didn't like a plot twist. I didn't like a solution to a problem. I didn't like in a movie when this happened. That's a deus ex machina, or whatever people would say. I shouldn't mock. I might be saying it wrong, for all I know. It's a Greek term, and I want to say Euripides came up with it. Because in those days, there were all these plays, a lot of them were tragedies. And at the end of the tragedy, to give it a happy ending, to put some kind of pat end to the play you've just seen, one of the gods would come down from the rafters or whatever you call it in a machine, like a dumbwaiter kind of thing, or they would be pushed up from the understage in a machine kind of thing, and the gods would say, "Oh no, I cannot bear to see ye suffer more. I shall whisk you away from the foibles and mistakes thou hast made. All shall be well." Okay, you know, that was a terrible example, and if I were concentrating on something other than the road, you might have gotten a better voice than that, than I did just then. Basically, the god would show up to say, "Oh no, I will fix things." And I guess it happened again and again and again because audiences wanted happy endings. They wanted their cake and to be able to eat it too. You know, it was a tragedy, but they didn't want to feel too bad. They wanted a tragedy with a happy ending. Yay! Which is fine. I mean, it's probably better than what we got going on now, where it's just like, I want a remake of something from 23 years ago that I liked, and I don't want to go not knowing what to expect. So, Euripides, if it was Euripides, made up this term to mean, you know, any time that the gods or an outside force or a bad playwright came up with a solution so that there could be a happy ending. And here we are all these years later, and you hear people use that phrase, but I think they use it incorrectly. I heard somebody say when the Hulk destroyed that Chitauri war serpent with one punch, that was a deus ex machina. And I'm trying to wrap my head around it. How could that be? I don't know. In college, I saw F.W. Murnau's Faust. It was the silent film from the 20s. And the ending was literally a deus ex machina, although I don't know that there was a machine that God came from. But he came down and he said, "All is forgiven. No, no, thou shalt not go to hell because of Liebe." And this giant word Liebe came up on the screen. Now, if Big were here, he would be able to correct my pronunciation, because for some reason he knows a little bit of German. And, oh, geez, I hated that so, so, so much that even though the devil had honored his part of the bargain, and he had given Faust all these things that he wanted, that he promised, Faust was not held to his part of the bargain because of love. And it bothers me still to this day. I don't... I put it in a screenplay where a demon was talking about that. He's like, she says, "Did you ever see F.W. Murnau's Faust?" And she's going on and on about, she's like, you know, "Oh, the devil has to abide by his arguments, but man, no, they don't have to," kind of thing. And then she sighs and says, "Well, Murnau went to hell, so I guess there is some justice there." And that was my way of just putting it behind me and trying not to dwell on it. It's hard for me to put things behind me. I'm a dweller, a cellar dweller. Woo, listen to that car. Try and go. But people have been saying that anything, any solution to a problem which they feel is like a cheat or a disappointment is a deus ex machina. And so I wanted to talk about that with Big, that it's just, it bothered me. And then the other thing is people keep kicking around this term Mary Sue. And they were saying Rey in The Force Awakens is a Mary Sue. Fill in the blank is a Mary Sue. Any female character. Katniss Everdeen is a Mary Sue. And what they were basically saying is any very capable female character is a Mary Sue. And I happened to know the origin of that term as well. That it comes from the 1970s, comes from Star Trek fan fiction. And a story was written in which a girl, 15-year-old child prodigy, comes on board the Enterprise. Her name is Mary Sue. And it was wish fulfillment of the author, basically putting herself into the Star Trek universe. And I knew that that's what a Mary Sue was, is when the author inserts him or herself. And sadly, it's almost always female. I guess people have come up with like a play on Mary Sue called like a Gary Stew or a Marty Stew, or when it's a male character, but they tend to grab onto it a lot harder when it's a female character. And people kept using the phrase to mean somebody who's good at everything. So I was going to get together with Big, and I was going to talk about the origin of Mary Sue and talk about, well, where it comes from and why people misuse it. And so today, just for fun, I figured I would look it up so I could find the exact year that Mary Sue was coined. I think it was 1976. And I discovered, to my horror, that I was wrong. That the people who had been misusing Mary Sue were right, and I was the one that was wrong. Mary Sue doesn't mean when the author inserts him or herself into the text as a way to hang out with Captain Kirk or have sex with Spock. It's when a character does everything extraordinarily well. And even though the origin is still that 1976 Star Trek fan fiction, what happened in that story was that this girl comes on board the Enterprise and she wins over Dr. McCoy's respect, and Captain Kirk just falls in love with her, thinks she's just awesome, the bee's knees, and even Mr. Spock's stoic reserve is melted and he has to arch his eyebrow and appreciate how good Mary Sue is, how logical she is, or how she's able to beat him at holographic chess. Not holographic, that's Star Wars. Three-dimensional chess. And from that point on, any female character who was uber competent and able to achieve it all was a Mary Sue, who can do anything and everything, who can fly the Millennium Falcon, fix the Millennium Falcon better than Han does, who can use a Jedi mind trick before she's ever heard the term Jedi mind trick, who is able to defeat a Dark Lord of the Sith, whatever they call that, in Force Awakens, the first time she ever ignites a lightsaber. And boy, I feel bad that I was wrong on that. Because, you know, I like to feel superior to people around me. I like to feel like they're wrong and I'm right. And in this case, what if we had done that episode and I went on and on about how is Rey a Mary Sue? Does J.J. Abrams think that transplant himself into Daisy Ridley's body? Not that I would turn that opportunity down. See, I don't know how I've had it wrong all these years. I remember people used Wesley Crusher as an example of a male Mary Sue, because not only was Gene Roddenberry inserting himself into the story, not only having a kid who was thinly veiled himself on the page, but Gene Roddenberry's middle name was Wesley. You know, he even named the character after himself. But I'm happy that we didn't get together and record this episode last week, because I would feel like a buffoon. Now, luckily, there would have been enough time for me to try and spin it in an amusing way and say, little did I know, or something. But I just thought I dodged a bullet on there. You know, I've gotten things wrong before on the podcast or on my blog or things like that. And if people want to correct me, that's fine. I'm not insanely defensive about it, but yeah, there is a tendency for me to be defensive. And most of the time, I avoid that because I don't write about very technical stuff very often, where people can say, oh, geez, How did you come to that conclusion? Or you must not have done any research, which is something that was said in college that I never forgot after I did more research on that one story than I had ever done before so that I could sound like I knew what I was talking about. And I think, you know how your parents used to almost become sexually aroused by telling you how hard their childhood was or how much better you have it than them. I'm sitting in the car. It's a few hours later. I met with my friend. We ate. We recorded a podcast. And now I'm back in the car. I just started it up. The heater has gone out in my car. It went out last winter. And so I bought a little portable blow heater, a heating fan, you know, that I just plug into the cigarette lighter, and that is what keeps my hands warm. And it's gotten so cold like the last few weeks, though, that the windshield will be not fogged up, what do you call it? All iced over on the inside of the car. And so I have to sit for a minute with this little portable heater, and I try to warm it, melt it so that I can see while I'm driving, which is nothing to tell you about in a podcast, but it's weird. I almost get off on telling you about it. Like, it builds character to have a car without a heater. Dude, it doesn't build anything except for perhaps goosebumps. But anyway, I'm about to drive. We'll see how it goes. My worry is, though, that because I'm recording, you know, I'm going to fog up the windshield because I'm talking, you know. I just can't stop talking. But let's see, the first half of my episode was talking about Deus Ex Machina and Mary Sue's. And I really don't know what to talk about now. I was going to continue saying, you know, do I put Mary Sue's in my writing? And the answer is no. I much more enjoy writing about people with limitations, writing about people who are afraid, writing about people who are ignorant. When I put the second birth of a sidekick into this program that gave you like word count and what words do you use the most, the phrase that came up the most often was, Ben didn't know. Okay, so a minute ago before the sound went out, I was saying, you know, I want to be a better writer. And I was worried about Mary suing myself into Birth of a Sidekick. And then I realized I was talking about my old, as of, you know, 24 hours ago, interpretation of what a Mary Sue was again, rather than what it actually is, which is the hyper-competent, usually female character that can do everything without any training or despite their youth. You know, there are people that write those kind of stories. Or one writer in particular that I've read a lot of their books loves to write about genius children or youngsters who are wise beyond their years. Somebody who, you know, everybody underestimates because he's only 7 years old, but he's got such a high IQ or such a analytical mind that, you know, he's well beyond his years in fill in the blank. And dude, I'm sick to death of that in his writing. I mean, he just does it again and again. It's something that that speaks to him, obviously. And it's not necessarily anything wrong with that, really. It's just, that's not what I enjoy writing about. The characters I like to write are like the girl who thinks that it's maniac pixie dream girl instead of manic pixie dream girl. Or, you know, the girls in the Scottish scene that don't understand Shakespeare, that think that Robin Hood was a Shakespeare character. You know, that stuff just really amuses me, the naivete and people that are... And it's not just amuses. I've always felt like, because of my upbringing, that I'm always a step behind. And that I'm backward or lost or at a disadvantage. That sort of stuff, really, I guess I could say it's my forte, if you will. When I moved to Los Angeles, I felt like I was not an outsider so much as I just
like a country bumpkin. You know what I mean? I was there and I didn't know how to get around. I didn't know how to get anywhere. And me, I was dumb enough that I would pull over and there's a couple of dudes standing on the sidewalk and I'd ask them, hey, how do I get to, you know, and I would say, that's how dumb I was. Not realizing, you know, that they will probably stab me, or what happened the first couple of times that I did that in LA is they pretended to speak no English. Because I grew up in a place where everybody knew everybody's name and their history, and that's just where I come from. But again, this wasn't really what I wanted to talk about, is it? Big and I, we were talking about our triple word score contest entries over at the Dunstief. That's something we were talking about tonight. And he said, do you still have the longer version of Greetings from the Ninth Sector, which was the story I wrote for that contest? And I said, yeah. And I thought he was going to say, we should do like an incentive episode of the Dunstief where we both read our longer versions of those stories and then we talk about them. But instead he was just like, well, maybe we should make a movie of it, which is something that he's really got an interest in right now, is filmmaking again. He used to make all these little videos for his kids, and there was a while there when he would record himself, I believe with his phone, jogging every single morning. He was trying to get exercise, and so he would go for a run, and he would always set up the camera and record himself running, and it was kind of a game for him where I'll record myself and then I'll make a video of, you know, the first 100 miles, where I just edit all this together, you know, under you know, a Bee Gees song or something like that. And that really interested him. It does to me too. Something I've been thinking about is, where I work, outside the window there's a mountain, and sometimes, like when the sun is setting or when the clouds are really low, the mountain is beautiful. Right now, you know, it's just covered with snow, and it is still beautiful even though I hate the winter. And so I've stepped out a time or two and taken a picture of the mountain, and I thought, you know what would be cool is if I did that every single day I'm at work. I step out, take a picture of the mountain, and eventually, just like Big did, I sit down and I edit a montage of that. You know, put some music under it or whatever and have each image fade into the next one. And that seems really, really fun to do. But A, I will never remember to step out and take a picture of the mountain, except for, you know, once every 2 weeks or something like that, which is fine, except for that it's going to take you a year to get enough photos to even make, you know, for a 30-second video. And then the other thing is, I don't know that I'll ever edit them together. It's like, I thought it would be fun to do the fake Sean Connery songs that I do for this show on YouTube, put them out, and even that, just laying the audio under a picture of me and fake Sean Connery, I've only managed to do like 3 times. It's just so much work, but it's not. I don't know. I guess we all have to have priorities, because every single human being could do more than they will do in the short lives that they have. And a fan of the show emailed me just the other day, yesterday or today, and said, you know, that I used to have all of these ideas for short stories that I could write, but I didn't know how to write, or I wasn't a real writer, and so I would just forget. I'd have all these ideas, and I would forget. But listening to you and Big talk, I've started jotting down my ideas, writing them down, and maybe one day, you know, they will become stories. And, you know, that's how my mind works, at least, is that there's a whole lot of ideas, and only a couple of them will ever get written, and the rest just fade away. But if I had like the work ethic of a real writer, of somebody who, you know, sits down and thinks of it as a job or something that they have to do every single day, like those people that exercise, like Big going on his little runs every single day, I have to do it. Would I have any ideas that escape, that fade away? And I think, sadly, I still would. Because there's just not enough hours in the day and not enough days in a lifetime to cover every single idea that comes into my mind. And so that's kind of the point I was trying to make with the video and all that stuff. It's just you never know what you should do, what you should work on. There are things that I do that waste time, and I recognize that it wastes time. Just going on to Facebook and reading, I don't know, the first 40 posts or whatever that people who are my friends have posted eats up like an hour. And there are days that I don't go on Facebook. And then there are days that, yeah, I spend an hour and a half. That's just gone. The hour is gone. And should I have spent that hour? Did I have better things I could do with that hour? And yeah, the answer is yes, of course. That's the sound of the car driving over hardened snow. Okay, I'm just going to kill the engine. We'll see how quiet it suddenly becomes out here. Ready? On your mark, get set, and there's so many projects that I'd like to work on, so many audiobooks that I'd like to do, audio versions of my own stories. I imagine, if you're listening to this, that you don't mind listening to me talk. But I also imagine that you'd probably rather I share a short story than just go on and on about my misconceptions about Mary Sue's. And yeah, I think when I first started this show, there was an episode where it's like, oh, there's no story in this episode, guys. I'm sorry, you know, I'll do better next time. And now it's almost like 50-50. Half the episodes are stories and half the episodes are just me talking. I've explained why in the past. You and I are captive audiences because I'm stuck in the car. Although right now I'm parked and I should go in and I can actually accomplish something if I want. But when I'm driving somewhere, I might as well flap my jaw as a podcast. You know, accomplish two things at once. It's kind of like you people when you're driving and checking your email at the same time. Anyhow, so Big mentioned the whole movie thing. We should make a movie of Greetings from the Ninth Sector. And I wonder if I should do a recording of Greetings from the Ninth Sector. You know, for this kind of thing. Because there's virtually no chance you would hear it here and not have listened to it on the Doonsteef. It's, Doonsteef, just so many people, more people know of it. And I don't resent that. I'm glad. I'm grateful for every single listener to the Doonsteef. But, I mean, just between you and me, I'm more grateful for the people who listen to the Rish Outcast. There are far fewer. But there's no fooling myself into thinking that, you know, they're here for the stories, they're here for Big Anklevich. If you listen to the Rish Outcast, it's because of me. And that's neat. It's kind of like, you know, my blog. I have a blog. It's mostly for entertaining myself. Journal entrying and stuff like that. Big has two blogs. He's got one that's Big Anklevich, and it's mostly just for the Anklecast, right? Although he's published stories on there and his progress and losing weight and things like that. But he also has one of his family, and this is my family trip, and I so-and-so's birthday, and I did this, and or I went here, or, you know, we went to the school play and all that. And he writes all that stuff down ostensibly so that the relatives, like his in-laws and his dad and stuff like that, can read about the exploits of the kids. But I think more truthfully, he writes these things down because it's a journal entry. It's something for him. to remember when his kids were the age they are right now, or when they were first born, or, you know, when they were in the school play or in the band or whatever there might be. That's not going to happen. It's not going to stick around forever. And so that fulfills a couple of needs. In his case, there's a third use for his blog, and it is that his kids can read this and be like, oh yeah, I was in the school play. Oh yeah, I played the triangle in the orchestra. Or, oh yeah, I once bit a child and they had to get stitches. I mean, if that happened, and his kid was able to be like, wow, I had no memory of that, but my dad wrote in amusing detail about what happened, then it's all worth it. Then it's not just, you know, it's not a waste of his free time, or something that he does just for self-indulgence, or something that he does for the in-laws. Or, I mean, it serves many purposes. It's totally worth it. And I think that that's neat. And yeah, these rich outcasts, sometimes I think, oh, well, it would be better if these were like little journal entries and I would tell you about my day or my week, or, you know, hey, there's a girl at work and I sort of like her, but she's completely crazy. And I should know because I'm a little bit crazy, but wow, she's off the deep end, broken. Those kind of things I'm tempted sometimes to talk about because it's like, oh, well, this is sort of a journal. And again, you're a captive audience. But I still see it as more of an extension of the Doonstief than of my blog. Do you know what I mean? My blog, I can talk about stuff. I don't talk about really intimate stuff very often, you know. It's a combination of open letter and journal entry. And they, yeah, this podcast tends to be more, I'm trying to entertain. I'm trying to get my work out there. I don't often plug the things that I've put out there, but it could work for that. I mean, there are guys like Cory Doctorow. Well, let's just say Cory Doctorow, who I've listened to their podcast. Is it a podcast? It's like a blog cast where, you know, he just talks about, I'm in a hotel room in Des Moines. I'm here because there's a convention, or I'm doing a signing or whatever. And, you know, this is what I'm working on. And sometimes he'll share short stories, or he'll share chapters. And it's self-serving, but not in a bad way. It gives his fans something to listen to. It brings his fans closer to him. Believe me, I know. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. It's freezing cold. And you are in the car with me right now. Do you know what I mean? We're experiencing the cold together. We're sharing. That's kind of a big deal. It's kind of amazing. It's, you know, like when FDR would do his fireside chats, or Winston Churchill would address the nation, you know, during World War II and stuff. You know, it was a way of reassuring. It was a way of coming into the homes of the people that were listening through their Wi-Fi, through their radios, and assuring them that you're still there, keeping them updated in what's going on with the war and with the world or with the nation. But it was also a friendly voice. It was also a means to connect people to Roosevelt, to Churchill. Do you know what I mean? It can't have hurt public opinion to have them show up in the ears of America and Britain every Sunday night. Do you know what I mean? You can't help but connect on either a subconscious level or an emotional level with somebody who's telling you about their lives, with somebody who's telling you, hey, I appreciate that you're out there. Stay strong. I know that you're struggling, and I've been struggling too. Here's a couple of the things that I've been going through. And together we can make it through. Of course, I could be completely deluding myself, just the same way that it was like, well, I know what a Mary Sue is. And Ray is absolutely not one. She is a Mary Sue. I mean, that's something that I complained about without realizing that that's what I was complaining about. I'll try and get a story out to you next time. As you know, the story episodes take a lot longer. It's harder. You know, let's say Rish Outcast is 30 minutes long. If there's no story, it probably takes 90 minutes to finish an hour. Sorry, 2 hours maybe to finish. But if there's a story, triple that, probably. Anyhow, you don't need to know any of this stuff, right? You don't want to see how the sausage is made. Maybe you do. I'm going to try, though. I mean, to be a little bit more self-serving. When I say that Cory Doctorow was self-serving, I hope you don't think that I'm criticizing him. I find that inspiring. I want to do that. I know Abby Hilton has a blog, not a blog, a podcast, where she shares how things are going with her writing and where she's going to be going. And I don't know. I mean, she may talk about details of her love life and stuff like that too. Somehow I doubt it, but you know, I need to work on that a little bit more in this podcast. For example, I did the male chapters. I did the narration for the male chapters of The Scarlet Albatross, which is the 2016 book that Abby put out. And it's a really good book. And I got to do a bunch of fun voices and accents. And I know that she's putting that out there on her blog. Not in its entirety like she did with Hunter's Unlucky. But she's going to put out like a third of the book. And then, you know, if what happens next? Find out in Marvel Comics. That sort of thing. It's like, well, just go ahead and buy the book and you can find the rest, or go download the audiobook and you can hear the rest. I need to do that sort of thing. Anytime I publish a short story, any new progress on my novel, I need to talk about that on this podcast. And so in future episodes, I hope to do that. I'll probably forget, but it would be neat if I didn't. So this has been Rish Outfield. Thank you for coming with me and shivering with me in the dark. Good night.
For your information, the podcast you have just suffered through was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. That little bit of knowledge just might save your life one day.